Hello, Sandra here, and let me ask you a question. Are you getting enough? I bet you'd love more, right? Well, AdamandEve.com want to give you more with 10 free gifts. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for somebody, and then a specially selected toy for another somebody, and then a little something for everybody. Hey! Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. That's 9 things already. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. So what do you have to do to get your 10 free gifts, huh? Oh, it's not hard. You just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code SEXNERD at checkout. And that's it. You'll get all 10 free gifts. So check out AdamandEve.com today. Select one item and get 10 free gifts, including free shipping, when you enter offer code SEXNERD. That's SEXNERD at AdamandEve.com.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, sex nerd. Welcome to the show. Sandra here. This episode I've wanted to do for a long time. I've wanted to talk about the new monogamy. Oh my goodness. Oh, I'll talk about it in a minute. Before we get started, I wanted to make sure I tell you all the dates. I'm hosting Body Storytelling starting this Friday. You can go to bodystorytelling.com if you're in Los Angeles. Phoenix, I will be there this Saturday at the Sexual Health Expo. Go to sexualhealthexpo.com. And you actually get a 2-for-1 deal if you type in the promo code NERD4SHE, N-E-R-D 4 She, S-H-E. So if you put that in, you should get a 2-for-1, and I hope to see you there. I'm 5 o'clock, April 25th. I will be talking about blowjobs. Portland, I'm really looking forward to podcasting with you. Just coming up, my goodness. May 7th, I'll be there at 7:30 at Dante's Live. You can go to dantesLive.com, and I'll be podcasting with Erica Bowen of Oh Joy Sex Toy. So many people know how good she is. Oh my goodness, you have to check it out if you don't know her work. Anyway, we'll be podcasting together and talking to strippers about their work, since Portland has the most strip clubs per capital. Basically, there's a lot of strip clubs in there, and I want to figure it out. I want to know. I've always wanted to be a stripper, but then not, because I'm shy and not comfortable with that sort of thing. So I want to live vicariously through other people who are braver than me. Okay. You can go to dantesLive.com and to the calendar in order to find out more. Tickets are $12 online, $14 at the door. Also, I'll be in the Bridgetown Comedy Fest, also in Portland. So on May 9th, around 1 o'clock, I will be podcasting with Kyle Kinane, DJ Real, and Alicia Sanchez. I've got 3 comedians, and we'll be talking about Urban Dictionary. I look forward to it. I've got some pretty juicy questions to ask them. And it's really important debates. We've got to figure things out. So that's Portland. And then, of course, I get to Oakland that evening, May 9th, for the Girl Sex 101 launch party. Dude, tickets are only $20. $40 gets you VIP access and a book. So check that out on Eventbrite. Just go to Oakland and then type in Girl Sex 101. It should come up. Okay, that's a lot of dates. Thank you for tolerating me telling you all the things. It's a lot of flying. A lot of flying in my future, a lot of peanuts, a lot of honey roasted peanuts and pretzels, and hopefully not crying babies near me. Not that I have anything against them. I respect their struggle. Okay, I like you. Thank you for listening in on my conversation with Dr. Tammy Nelson. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra Podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Dr. Tammy Nelson, welcome to my microphone. Mm-hmm. I already gave you the metaphor that it's a friendly penis. Speak into it lovingly. Okay, so I've wanted to interview you for at least almost possibly the entire time that I've been doing this podcast, because wow. We met early on.
That's the nicest thing anyone ever said to me.
Well, good, because it's true.
I totally adore you now.
Aw, thank you. No, we met way back at some ASECT conference at some point, and you were speaking on the new monogamy at the time, and I feel like this podcast has really just talked about poly so much, and I don't have the tools or skill set around talking about monogamy. Because I'm in a place in my life where I really just am waving the poly flag in my own personal life, and I don't know what to do when people want to remain in monogamy, because I'm just maybe a little irresponsible that way right now. I will probably be better at some point. But your work is so valuable, and I admire it so much. And even Googling you, I told you at the pool, because, yeah, we sunbathed just now.
Feeling good? Because we're that cool.
Yeah, we're really cool. I was so impressed at the amount of world traveling you do and teaching people. You teach therapists. You work with couples as well. What do you like better?
I think I like both, because therapists are usually part of a couple too. And so I think therapists are people as well. And so I like the whole idea that therapists want to learn and talk about their relationships almost as much as the couples and the individuals that I work with. And so I really like both. I like the idea that I can affect change in people's relationship through working with the people that actually are on the front line.
Okay, follow-up question then.
Mm-hmm.
Are therapists, in your observation, in better or worse relationships than the population?
Well, interesting trivia fact. A lot of therapists are in second marriages.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that may or may not be because a lot of therapists tend to be older that are in private practice, because they've already serve their time working in agencies and hospitals. By the mm-hmm. time you're in private practice, you have some experience. So if you ever go to a conference and you look around, a lot of times in psychotherapy conferences, people have a lot of gray hair. And so there's a lot of experience in psychotherapy. You know, it's one profession you don't really age out of. You just get better the older you are, and people respect you more. So I think we represent sort of a cross section of marriage and relationships, and we're not really afraid to admit it.
Okay. That was so political. You could run for office.
But I do think that's true. And I think there are statistics that say that therapists have a higher rate of second marriage and a higher rate of infidelity.
Which is the perfect segue, because we're totally about to talk about that. Higher rate of infidelity. Wait, who did research on that? And who self-disclosed that?
Well, it's really hard to get statistics, really true statistics about infidelity, because infidelity is about lying, and so people lie to the researchers. Mm-hmm. So there, honestly, there's such a wide range of statistics about infidelity. Mm-hmm. Anywhere from 45 to 65% of people cheat at some point in their marriage, and that doesn't include committed partnerships. So we don't really know if that's true, because men tend to brag about their infidelity and women will sort of lie and say that they're not cheating when they are, because there's always historically been much greater damage for women if they admit that they're cheating. Mm-hmm. They tend to lose their children, they lose money, they lose their head, they get burned in the street. I mean, just historically, it's more damaging for women to admit. So we're not really sure, but some of the statistics do say that people in certain professions cheat more.
What's the highest?
First responders.
Really? So high risk jobs?
I think so. I think it's, cops, even nursing, firemen.
Oh, I guess it's also, I remember I read an ethnographic book on cop life. It was fascinating. But because you don't get a lot of family time, you're often off with different people.
Yeah. And people who spend a lot of time traveling, people who, are away from their families, pilots. So sort of cliche, but
if you're in a relationship right now with any of the above mentioned occupations, are you freaking out a little bit? We're going to talk about it. Tammy, where can I call you Tammy?
Yes, please
Dr.
do.
Dr. Nelson.
Dr. Tammy, whatever you want.
Dr. Tammy. Dr. Tammy, that's a TV name. I love it. Dr. Tammy. What do you do out in the world? Because people are probably worrying, wondering. People probably wondering.
And worrying.
Because I have admiration for you, but let's lay the groundwork. I know you're a therapist. You're so much more. Tell the people.
Well, I am a psychotherapist. I have a PhD in sexology, and I'm a certified sex therapist. And I'm also a certified Imago relationship therapist, which is a type of couples therapy. I have a lot of other certifications as an alcohol and drug counselor. I'm an art therapist. I'm a little compulsive about my degrees, and I've written a bunch of books to help couples. So I have a private practice, and I see couples and individuals, and I also travel around and teach therapists how to work with couples all over the world, and I do retreats and intensives for couples. So my mission in the world is really to create sustainable relationships, and I believe in that wholeheartedly, because I really feel like if you can change someone's relationship, you can change the world. Until you can fix what's going on at home, you can't fix anything. I mean, look what's going on in our government.
Absolutely. I think that quote or that idea goes back to Confucius. Just if you want to fix the world, you got to fix local stuff. If you want to do that, you need to fix your family. If you, you know, fix yourself, it goes all the way back to the individual every time. That's a beautiful mission statement.
Yeah, thanks. And I really, I get sort of stuck on the fixing yourself, because I think it's really hard to just fix yourself when you're home by yourself meditating. I think the greatest lesson and the greatest challenge and the best way to fix yourself is in a relationship. Even if you don't have a committed partner, everyone you meet is like your soulmate and your mirror and the best way to work on yourself. The people at the rent-a-car place, the people, the guy sitting next to you on the plane. If you can't create a relationship with someone in the world, how are you going to reach across the aisle in the Senate? How are you going to reach across the world to Israel? Like, you can't change anything. And I think there's something even more powerful going on when we talk about our sexual relationships. Because sex is the only thing that covers every level of our existence and our awareness. If you change someone's sex life, you change them physically, you change them emotionally, you change them psychologically, you change them spiritually, you change everything.
I've never had anyone break that down before. It feels true, and I've felt that, but that is true. Like, you've seen that, that you really do change everything.
Oh, and I totally believe it. And I think for us, for people that work with people around sexuality, there is nothing more powerful. And what an amazing gift that we have that we can do that for people.
Oh, my goodness. I have a moment, and that's not very good podcast airtime. Just for me to sit there and go, wow, wow. Oh, my goodness. So I want to talk about the new monogamy hardcore. I want to talk about hardcore, Dr. Tammy.
This is the hardcore section.
Okay, so let's start with a basic question. And please tell me if there's an even more basic question to ask. But what the heck does new monogamy mean, and how does it differentiate from just monogamy?
Yeah. So I think, you know, the new monogamy gets a lot of interesting responses, because people interpret what I mean by the new monogamy in a lot of interesting and weird ways. So the book, The New Monogamy, is redefining your relationship after infidelity. It was really meant to be a book that has two parts. One, how do you create a new relationship going forward after one of you cheats or betrays your partner? The second part is, how do you redefine your monogamy agreement? You know, we all have an agreement, whether it's implicit and we just assume what the agreement is, or it's explicit and we say it out loud. And it's a way to define what's it going to be like going forward, because what we had up until now obviously isn't working, because we didn't plan on this affair. If you don't have an open relationship, then obviously cheating on each other, whatever that means, and we'll talk about that in a second, wasn't included in that vision that you had of a relationship. So there's been obviously a betrayal, and the relationship you have now has to end. Like, this is over.
Yeah, that's the thing, is the big question, can you survive an infidelity in a relationship where monogamy was the agreement, even if it was implicit? Is it possible? I mean, really, truly, to fix a marriage, because, or relationship, because, I mean, how many people are getting married now? I mean, let's be serious.
That was an interesting mumble.
I just see so much about how the younger generation isn't getting married as much, so... But marriage is such an easy catch-all phrase, but even though it's not inclusive of everyone, it's still easy to say. But can you actually
reforge a relationship that's just as strong as it was before?
Well, first of all, marriage is decreasing. You know, 40% of people think marriage is just obsolete. Mm-hmm. Less people than ever before are married now since 1895. And so it's definitely true that marriage is decreasing. But the explicit monogamy agreement, whatever that is, the thing that you make in front of your friends, your community, your church, your family, the thing that you agree to and say, these are the rules. I'm going to love and honor you till death do we part. Whatever those rules are, that's the explicit agreement. Mm-hmm. But the implicit agreement is something totally different. It means, yeah, I'll love you until I don't feel like it anymore. Mm-hmm. Or I'll love you until I meet someone else. Or I'll be faithful to you until I go to the strip club, because that doesn't really count. Mm-hmm. Or masturbating to pornography doesn't really count. That's not cheating. Or having a Facebook friend where I tell all my problems to, that's not really cheating. So those implicit assumptions that we make about what monogamy means mm-hmm. can be totally different to me than they are to you.
If we were dating, that would be a problem someday.
If we were dating and we never talked about them when we stood at the altar, then that becomes a huge problem. Because we don't say, I promise to love, honor you, and never have another Facebook friend. Or to tell you every time I masturbate in the shower. Then once we're married, that becomes a huge problem and a huge betrayal. When I walk in on you and you're masturbating and I say, hey, what the hell? And you say, I've been doing this since I was 11. I don't see what the problem is.
Right.
But to me, that's a huge betrayal because I thought that was going to stop once we got married. The agreement in my head, my implicit assumption was, once we got married, you would stop touching your penis. It's my penis now. And I don't feel like touching your penis, so no one's touching your penis.
Okay, wait. Rewind for a sec. I just a little cul-de-sac of information. Oh. Does something different happen in people's brains when they get married? Because I feel like when people are together for 10 years, just slowly they sort of become emotionally married. And so, or is there something where the marriage contract has even extra pressure and extra assumptions on top of just a monogamous relationship?
Well, it has nothing to do with the length of time together. What happens for everyone is that the moment you commit to forever, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter when you stand in front of the rabbi or the priest, or if you make a drunken commitment to each other one night when you're together for 8 years, the moment you commit to forever, mm-hmm. you regress. And you regress to what you know of forever, which is your parents' unconditional love.
I see.
And once you make this assumption about you should love me unconditionally, you're screwed because because then you totally parentify the relationship. Because marriage is not unconditional.
Mm-hmm. But people think that it is or assume or implicitly.
We all assume that it is. You should totally love me unconditionally. I don't love you unconditionally. There's definitely conditions. You have to act a lot of different ways that I tell you to act.
I guess I feel like marriage, there are going to be plenty of times when I don't love my partner, and that's okay because I agreed to be there. But I guess, does that mean I'm like super advanced?
That's very mature of you to understand that.
Thanks. I mean, there's plenty of times where I'm like, I do not love you. Right. Maybe that's because I'm slightly bipolar.
No, it's because you're mature and you understand that love isn't consistent. It comes and goes. And it doesn't mean that you aren't committed to the choice. Marriage, monogamy, all that stuff is a choice that you mm-hmm. make. Love is a choice that you make. And you don't have to feel it every day. It's not a feeling. It's a choice.
This is good stuff. All this regressing to the idea of forever and parentifying mm-hmm. the relationship. Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is good stuff. Okay.
Totally desexual, by the way. Because, you know, once you tell your partner, you know, you never pick up your socks and you drive too fast. You don't know how to balance a checkbook and, you know, how come you're not having sex with me? That's totally parentifying. And you don't want to have sex with someone who's like your parent or like your kid. That's gross.
Then where is there space to have roommate type conversations, which is also desexualizing, but the everyday, I mean, it can't always be hot and spicy, or have you figured it out?
Well, you're absolutely right. There's two parts of a relationship or a marriage or a committed partnership. There's the companionship, mm-hmm. which is what makes you roommates. It's like running the business of your marriage.
Yeah.
Who pays for the mortgage? Who lets the dog out? Who picks up the pizza? What movie are we going to watch? Who takes out the garbage? Mm-hmm. That's the roommate part. But the whole other part of the relationship is the eroticism. Mm-hmm. And people think if we just work out the roommate part, then the erotic part will take care of itself. And that's not true. You know that. You have to work as much, if not more, on the erotic part. And all the other stuff will work itself out. Because the erotic part is where the passion is, the I love you part. You can love your roommate. But if you're not having an erotic relationship, then you're not going to feel in love.
Dr. Tammy, pause for a second because I will... be honest, I need reminders like what you just said, that I need to work on the erotic and that it doesn't just work itself out if you make sure that all the socks are off the floor. I would love to talk about how you do that. I feel like a few bullet points might be good because I want to talk about what to do when cheating occurs and if you can repair that.
Yeah, because I think they're related. I think that everyone has this desire for Eros energy, that erotic, passionate, alive, creative life force. And if it's not in your marriage or in your relationship, it's going to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's going to either get split off outside the relationship into an affair, or it's going to go into porn. It's got to go somewhere.
Okay.
So in order for it to be back in your relationship or stay in your relationship, you have to work on that erotic piece. So one of the parts that people always get confused about is that it's okay to create a sex date once a week.
That's, see, there's a lot of
controversy
and like resistance. Head shaking. No resistance. Yes.
Yeah, because there's this sort of myth that if it's not spontaneous, then it's not erotic. Well, it wasn't spontaneous when you were dating either. You knew that when you got together, you were going to shave your legs and take a shower and, mm-hmm. because you're probably going to have sex. That's not spontaneous. It's totally planned. It's always planned. It never is like an accident that you fall in bed with each other. You can be as spontaneous as you want if you plan it. You have to carve out and honor the erotic relationship. It has to be something sacred and intentional. Because everything else during the week can be as spontaneous as you want. You can come home and sweep the dishes off the kitchen table and say, take me now, if that's what you want. Every Wednesday, half a day on Friday, it doesn't matter. But
new
Saturday,
dishes every week.
Right.
To break. Fine. I love it.
But Saturday night, if that's your sex day, you better meet every Saturday, 9 o'clock, light the candles, turn on the music, make that your sacred space to honor that erotic part of your relationship. Everything else could be for your companionship. But this is a practice. This is a choice. It's like yoga or meditation. It's a sacred part of your relationship that if you're not honoring that, mm-hmm. who's going to do that for you?
I don't know. Your therapist? No, they can't do that for you. Do you do that? No, you don't do that for
me. No, but I'll tell you, when you have an affair, part of the excitement is that the anticipation, mm-hmm. and the planning, and you're going to meet, and it becomes a very sacred thing. Mm-hmm. And so make your sex date something that you anticipate. The anticipatory eroticism is actually really good for women because it builds up this excitement in your body, and it builds up the sort of anticipation that creates those levels of arousal that we need in order to get to desire.
Nice. Good to know. No, I need that. I need to anticipate more. I usually also people know like my sex drive is much lower than it used to be, and so for me, I usually just go through the motions. And I know within like 5 or 10 minutes, I'll be like, "Oh yeah." I mean, not like I'm hopping on right away, but I just let the desire come up as it. I trust that it comes, and it does, and then it comes. That's terrible. I should not be making those jokes anymore.
No, but it totally makes sense because for women, arousal comes before desire. For men, this is a gross generalization, but most of the time true, desire comes before arousal. So they want to do it, and then they can get aroused and do it. For women, arousal comes before desire. So it makes total sense. Once you're aroused, you're like, I'm totally into this. But you're not walking around going, yeah, I really want to, until you're totally aroused. Which is why I say if you want to have sex with a woman on Saturday, you have to start on Wednesday. And you build up.
Okay, now you're just teasing me because that's a whole other conversation about all the little avenues off of the idea of male versus female and their arousal patterns and like, no, Dr. Tammy, stay with me. We're going somewhere.
It has a lot to do with monogamy, though. It has a lot to do with what would make an affair hot for a woman. Knowing that I'm going to meet this guy or a woman, another woman, in, you know, in a couple days, and he calls me and he writes me texts and he says, I can't wait to see you and I'm so happy to be meeting with you. That's a total turn on. Why wouldn't I be hot for that? And so that fits that arousal template so well that the anticipation of an affair is many times what is the turn on of an affair, brings that erotic energy into the relationship. And that's part of what sometimes starts that implicit behavior when people have an emotional affair online. Mm-hmm. 40% of the time it turns into something physical for just that reason.
Yeah, types of affairs. Okay, when I was younger, I used to think that there were two kinds of affairs. There, and this was like maybe when I was 14, that there are emotional affairs and there are physical affairs. And I was more of I was emotionally affairing all over the place. I wasn't actually physical with anyone, but I was in love with tons of people and just getting a lot of my juicy feelings from them. And I figured it was okay as long as I didn't touch them or get erotic with them. Are there different, I mean, how many types of affairs are there?
Well, and I think you just described what I call the monogamy continuum so mm-hmm. well. Because there's a continuum of how you define monogamy. Mm-hmm. So for you, it might have been totally okay to even have like sex online with someone, like mutual masturbation, as long as you didn't touch each other, mm-hmm. or as long as you didn't show your face, or as long as it was with someone you didn't know, or as long as you didn't say I love you, or as long as, you know, your partner didn't know about it, or as long as, I mean, there's a lot of those implicit assumptions about mm-hmm. what monogamy is. For some people, you can be in a polyamorous relationship or an open relationship, and as long as you don't have coffee with anyone outside of the pod, you're fine. But once you do that, it's cheating on everyone.
Right. Infidelity can be in any type of relationship.
Absolutely. Anyone who defines their monogamy along that continuum and then goes outside of that agreement, that monogamy mm-hmm. agreement, that's where the betrayal is. So for you, whatever those monogamy thoughts were about how you defined it on that continuum, if you didn't share that with your partner and they felt something different, they thought that, you know, every time you have a fantasy about someone, you should come home and tell them mm-hmm. or else you're cheating, then they would feel betrayed by your, you know, your Facebook friends and your relationships online.
In therapy, when you're with couples, do you say, hold up, rewind a lot? Like just because people, I imagine, say a lot of these assumptions and don't recognize them as assumptions. And then backtracking to examine that. Is there a lot of the bunny hop going on?
I would encourage people. I teach people how to communicate about what they want in their monogamy. Mm-hmm. So I think it's more of an aha moment when people say, wow, I didn't realize that for you, that might be troublesome or that might be a betrayal, or it makes sense now why you don't trust me, because that obviously isn't okay for you that I do this. Or, you know, there's a lot of communication about what began months before the actual affair that might have led to monogamy betrayal.
So what if you have two people who want very different types of monogamy? Because some people feel betrayed if their partner watches porn. I mean, for me, when people ask me that, I kind of go like, you don't own their sexuality. And I kind of say there's parts of their sexuality that are going to be private and not having, some people think the Venn diagram is a perfect eclipse. And so I try and explain it that way, but I feel like there's so much more to it.
And that's true, but there's a big difference between privacy and secrecy.
Okay.
So agreeing that your private masturbatory relationship is totally yours is different than, okay, I promise that, you know, I'm not going to ask you every time you masturbate, but you have a whole secret life online mm-hmm. where you're not just masturbating occasionally to erotic imagery. You're actually contacting people online mm-hmm. and you have a mutual masturbation relationship and they know where you live and now you're meeting them outside and you're keeping a secret and you didn't tell me and you're into this whole kind of sexual fetish online that you never shared with me. And like, there's a, again, a range, a continuum here. That's not just, I can use porn online and it's none of your business. And for some people, they siphon off their erotic energy into porn and then there's nothing left in the relationship.
Okay. Then there's that for sure. I've definitely talked to people who are afraid that that was happening. So what about the person who, it's real simple. They promise that they won't look at porn when they masturbate because porn upsets their partner. And then secretly, they still watch porn because they can't really get off without visual, arousing images. That would be an infidelity if the agreement was that he wouldn't or they wouldn't watch porn, right?
See, the problem is not the porn, and the problem is not the imagery, and the problem is not the getting off, although that's something we would talk about. The problem is the secret and the betrayal. So really the issue is, well, let's talk about what's going on in bed and why the imagery is important and what's happening in your sex life. But the monogamy betrayal is the secret. You kept the secret and you betrayed it. Well, that's the beginning of a much larger betrayal. And so, you know, when we talk about a new monogamy, it would mean, okay, drawing a line in the sand and deciding what kind of relationship do you want going forward? What's the vision of your relationship? Is it, we want a relationship where we have a more open sexual experience, where we can try different things, where we allow more types of sexuality into our relationship, where we watch porn together? Like, what's the new vision that we create? Not that we're supposed to have, or that our therapists want, or that our friends want, or that the church wants for us, but what is it that we want to create?
So it's specially tailored. And I'm guessing your book are there worksheets, or is it mainly like chapters that explain how to create that?
There's a big section in the back about how to ask questions along that monogamy continuum. In each section, there's lists and lists of questions about how to ask each other what you want in the vision of your relationship going forward. So anybody can do that. I mean, I think you should re-up your monogamy agreement all the time. I mean, you have to renew your license. You might as well renew your monogamy agreement.
You have to renew your marriage license?
Your driver's license.
Oh, driver's license. Okay.
And you should renew your marriage license.
Like every 5 years, you got to go in for a new picture.
Why not?
That'd be funny. You have to wear your tux and your dress each time. Oh my goodness. Okay. Yeah, that's definitely, that's a new idea to introduce into culture. Have you experienced a lot of resistance?
Interestingly, when people are clear that developmentally we change over time, and you can have a lot of different marriages within the lifetime of your marriage. You have a different marriage when you're young, when you have kids, when they leave for college, when they move back home after college. All those marriages can happen within the lifetime of your marriage, but trust me, they are very different marriages. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. And a betrayal of your monogamy agreement means you got to end that marriage and grieve it and then make a choice. Do we want another marriage going forward with each other? Because sometimes an affair is a wake-up call where you decide, you know what, maybe this is the best thing that could have happened because we were on a totally bad track. And a lot of couples heal from that wake-up call and create a whole new marriage together going forward. Sometimes it's a can opener. Don't get me wrong. Sometimes it's a way to get the hell out, and maybe they should. But a lot of times the people that I work with are able to create a new agreement going forward and a whole new monogamy.
Your practice is in Connecticut, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a lot of patients in Connecticut or clients?
I have a lot of people in Connecticut that come see me, but I also do intensives around the world, so people can come see me when I'm traveling in different places. I also see people on Skype.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I do couples retreats. I have one in Fiji coming up, so people can see me.
Fancy. I
know, depending on when this is going
to
air, I don't know, but
oh yeah, it'll air in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so people can contact me through my website and find out what's coming up, because I might even be in their area.
Okay, great. DrTammyNelson.com.
DrTammyNelson.com. So it's DrTammyNelson.com.
Do you own DrTammy.com?
Don't know.
Okay. Because I love... Okay, anyway. I feel like Dr. Sandra would sound so silly. I don't know.
No, I love that.
I feel
that
like
sound.
I'd sound like a pediatrician, but Dr. Tammy has a good ring. hold on. So let me look at my notes. Ooh, here is a question that I was curious about. This is a little bit left field. The cognitive dissonance of believing a monogamy believing in marriage or partnership, and then cheating at the same time, like having those values and then breaking them. How do people deal with that mentally? Do they just make excuses for themselves? Do they blame? Like, what happens with that?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we all have the capacity to compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. And so monogamy means different things to different people. The capacity to come home and have a really great life at home with your partner, your kids, mm-hmm. your family, and to have a partner on the outside, mm-hmm. sometimes is a way to stay married. Mm-hmm. It's a way to keep your family, and it's a way to get your needs met outside. And sometimes people protect their partner by not telling them because mm-hmm. they don't want to hurt them and they don't want to destroy their family. And so they justify that by saying, you know what, as long as everybody's happy and everybody's needs are met, it's a way to compartmentalize. But the problem with that, I don't judge anybody who's doing that. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is we live in a society now where we're so split apart. We have so many relationships. We have so many open windows all the time. Mm-hmm. We're living on our phones and our Apple Watches and our computers. We have so many open boxes that we maintain constantly that we have dismembered ourselves. And for me, the definition of integrity is integrating mm-hmm. all the split off parts of us.
Oh, wow. I've never heard it like that.
To live in integrity means to remember mm-hmm. all those dismembered parts mm-hmm. and to try to live so that no matter where I am, no matter who I'm with, I am all of me. Like what you see is what you get.
I love that. Oh, I'm stealing it. I will credit you, but I'm also stealing it and putting it in my brain. And it's on this podcast, yeah, so yeah. It's forever. Integrity, yes. So compartmentalizing, although a survival necessity, is not a healthy thing to be doing.
Not for long periods of time, because okay. you will eventually feel like, who the hell am I? I can't live in this disintegrated place.
And so many people compartmentalize their sexuality, go away from all the other boxes. That box is over in the closet in a corner.
In porn. It's another yes. box. It's another way of splitting off who we are. And people do that when they feel shame. Mm-hmm. Shame forces us to split off and hide the parts of us that we feel we can't integrate into ourselves. Mm-hmm. If you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. And so I'm going to split off the parts of me that I feel shame about mm-hmm. so that they're hidden. And part of the healing process is not to cut it off, cut it out, you know, like surgery. It's to reintegrate it so that all of me is okay. The dark parts, the light parts, the broken parts, all of me is okay. What you see is what you got. This is who I am.
Gosh, I feel like if there were people in the room, they'd be applauding. Okay. Yay. Okay.
Thank you.
Follow-up question to the cognitive dissonance one. About and shame really actually kind of ties it all together is when people are frustrated in their relationships and want to have the conversation, because I imagine you don't have to be cheating in order to want to talk about creating a new monogamy, mm-hmm. an intentional monogamy.
Yeah.
Is the guilt and shame of wanting more, of wanting different, and not wanting to hurt your partner, wanting to protect them. And it kind of pisses me off. Like, stop being nice, be kind. It's, you know, be more proactively good. And that means bringing it up. But I don't know. It just feels like so many people are craving to be seen by their partners, but the awful, like, gut dropping out of your bottom kind of just terrible feeling of, oh no, I'm going to hurt you and it's going to be terrible and I'm the worst.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? You're making like the saddest face over both are.
Well, I think that, first of all, you always get more of what you appreciate. You never change your relationship by talking about what's not working or criticizing mm-hmm. what your partner's doing. So part of the way to change your conversation is not, I hate it when you go to the left. It's, I love it when you go to the right.
Okay.
It's to always bring up what's working and what you want more of. So even if you can say to your partner, God, I love it when, you know, 15 years ago we went to that, you know, sex club and just walked through there, I would love more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's, you know, I love that one time we watched that porn together. That was really exciting. I'd love to do more of that. Find one thing that's working and tell your partner you want more of it, that you really appreciate that about your partner. Mm-hmm. Don't point out what's not working and what you're not getting enough of, because your partner's going to shrink inside and get defensive. The way that you expand your relationship and the way that you change it is always with appreciation. So if there's one thing that you can do today in your relationship to expand it, to change it, to grow it, to be more honest, to work with more integrity, is to take a part of you that wants to expand your relationship and go home and tell your partner what you appreciate about them. One thing that you really appreciate about your sex life with them, and tell them, because you're bound to get more of it, and it's a way of beginning to open the conversation. It opens, it actually neurologically opens your frontal cortex, the front lobes of your brain, and it will prevent your partner from going into their brain stem, like their fight or flight, which is what happens
the
when
reptile.
You yeah, it's what happens when you come home and say, we need to talk.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, that's never good.
Okay. It opens so that all your circuitry is still functioning and you can fully hear.
Yeah, you want to hear more. You're like, tell me more. You appreciate me? Wow, that's so exciting. Tell me more.
Oh, God. I shut down when I hear compliments. I get really defensive. So I don't know what to do with my partners.
So you know what you do when your partner says, what I really appreciate about you? Like, what I really appreciate about you right now, Sandra, is what a great interviewer you are. You're so fun to talk to. So all you have to do is just mirror that back to me and say, so Tammy, what I hear you saying is I'm just a great interviewer. And so fun.
Oh, I just turned into the worst douchebag. Oh, I hear you that you'd like me to stop cheating. I hear that. Oh, man. Oh, this is so great. Well, so this is... this is, I feel, important, and I know we're running out of time, and there's so much. Tammy, come back. If, let's say I'm drawing a circle on this couch armchair, like if this circle and everything in it is what's the relationship at hand and what the person wants is 5 inches over, and it seems so just far out in the left field, it's almost in the bleachers, and you want to show them appreciation, but nothing you've done in the relationship so far has even gotten close to that. Let's say it's a very conservative, small community, and you want to go to a sex club in the big city or whatever the left field thing is. Do you have to just expand slowly till the circle eventually encapsulates also the thing you want? Or can you just do have a – what's the shortcut?
I think the shortcut is always to talk about your fantasies.
Okay.
Just because you have a fantasy doesn't mean you're going to take it into action, or doesn't mean your partner's going to be ready to take it into action. But if you share a fantasy with your partner of doing that, it gives your partner time to create what I call sexual empathy. Like, tell me more about what's hot about that for you. Like, how would that be hot to go to a sex club?
But just teaching the world to ask follow-up questions like that would be helpful. They don't.
Yeah. Often. Yeah, but sexual empathy just means learning what's hot about that for your partner and not necessarily being threatened by, okay, we have to, you know, go out and buy the hardware today. Like, you know, I don't necessarily have to be tied up and hung from the ceiling today, but I could ask you more about, like, what's hot about that for you? I want to know more about that fantasy. Just tell me until I can kind of empathize with you. Once I can empathize with, like, oh yeah, it makes sense knowing you that you would like to be suspended, I totally get it. Doesn't mean I'm going to take it into action, but I can kind of wrap my mind around why that's hot for you. Once you get to a place of empathy and around your fantasies and you get comfortable sharing fantasies, then you can start talking about what you're willing to take into action and how you can push your edge.
Okay.
But now that erotic energy is back in your relationship. It's not split off outside. It's not split off in porn. It's totally back in the conversation between the two of you. Sometimes just talking about your fantasies makes it hot. You can talk about that for the rest of your life and get hot off it. You don't even necessarily have to take it into action because now it's between the two of you. You're getting turned on by it. And that's what erotic energy is.
Okay. Can you measure erotic energy in an MRI?
I don't know. What's your microphone doing? Going beep, 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 beep.
If anyone's listening, there's a whole section, of course, for people who experience partners that will get defensive and can't really meet you where you are at when you want to start talking about fantasy. We did one called, I think it was Erotic Personalities, and that has some steps around talking about sex. So I know it's like, this is more advanced for some people in relationships. Okay, it is 12 o'clock noon. We need to get on the road. Tammy, where can people find you out in the world?
Please go to drtammynelson.com. And if you want to email me directly, you can email me at tammy@drtammynelson.com. And for anyone who's listening, if you want I can send you a free download of those monogamy questions and more information. So just for your podcast listeners, I'm happy to do that. If you want to email me directly, Tammy at Dr. Tammy Nelson, and I'll send you a free download of those monogamy questions that are in the book, and I'll send you more information as well.
Do you want them to put anything in the subject line so it's easier for you to see?
Sandra's podcast.
Okay. Just for some people, you're like, tell me this or else. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a last question because I feel like it's really important, and you can give a one-sentence Twitter-type response. When is it irreparable? Just for somebody who's at that crisis point to have a yardstick.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever irreparable unless your partner has had an affair because they really want out, and you'll know.
Oh, okay.
You'll know.
They just stop trying. And yeah. Okay.
You'll know.
Well, that's good. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. If not that, go see Dr. Tammy. Yeah, okay.
Call me.
Yeah. The New Monogamy. I want that book. I don't have it yet. This is good. Important.
Order it on Amazon or through my website, drtammynelson.com.
Dude. Wow. Okay.
Thank you so much for having me.
There was so much brain sex going on in the last half an hour. You don't even know. Go Team Fun. Thank you. Have a great rest of your trip in Southern California.
Thank you.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.